Would you give your mum, dad, aunt or that uncle who hugged your partner a little too long free access to your phone?
Oh, no!
Oh, my God, it's a really long video. Ew!
In Dave's brand new YouTube original, Get Off My Phone, we've got six comedians to give their phones over to a relative with total freedom to read messages, DMs, photos and browser history.
Where's your search history?
Sorry?
What to do, tips for relief.
The rules are simple. Their relative can read anything they want and even make calls from the comedian's phone.
What is this?
What is... I don't want this one.
That looks really bad.
Starring Tanya Moore, Anya Magliano, Finlay Christie, Travis J with his mum Angie Lamar, Hayley Morris, Grace Campbell and dad Alistair Campbell.
Slightly sexually compromising
people. Divulging their deepest digital secrets.
What the hell is happening?
Get Off My Phone, a Dave YouTube original. Available now on Dave's YouTube channel.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Conversations Against Living Miserably, a podcast where we try to find solace in a world where our brains are usually against us.
My name is Aaron Gillis, and each week I'll be joined by...
me, Lauren Patterson! Each week we chat to a different guest about how they try and live their life without misery, but we try and do it with a little bit of laughter, because otherwise that sounds like a pretty gloomy idea for a podcast.
This podcast is brought to you in partnership with Dave, the TV channel, and Calm, the campaign against living miserably. Morning! Welcome back to Conversations Against Living Miserably, a podcast that raises money for Calm, the campaign against living miserably. Calm are a charity who are leading the movement against suicide in the UK, and by talking, we aim to let each other know that we can get through this, that even though things might be shit right now, we can help each other out, we can talk, and we can be there for one another. And that's what this podcast is all about. This week's guest is Paul Sinha. Paul is a comedian and professional quizzer, known as the Cineman on the Chase, and he came in a very respectable last in the 8th series of Taskmaster. Today I talked to Paul about addiction, loneliness, and recovery. In this week's episode, it's just me doing the interviewing this week, unfortunately. There were some timing issues, which meant Lauren couldn't make it to the record, and as a result, this episode is a touch more serious than the others. Well, I mean, they're all serious, really, but Lauren's the funny and talented one, so she brings the levity to the situation. She's just very funny, and I'm just a bellend, so yeah, that happened. But don't worry, Lauren fans, she's back next week, and for every other conceivable episode ever. I miss you, Lauren, please come back. Anyway, here is my interview with Paul Sinha. Today's guest is Paul Sinha. Welcome.
Hello, nice to be here.
The first question we always start with is, when was the last time you felt calm?
Not that long ago.
Ooh.
Last night.
I think that might be one of the first ones that's been within the last 24 hours that we've ever had.
Last night I was in my comfort zone. I play in something called the Quiz League of London, and it's hand-to-hand quiz combat in pub rooms across London. And our team were playing a game yesterday, and you get 8 individual questions. And it's considered particularly noteworthy if you get all 8 out of 8, because it doesn't happen very often. It happens maybe in your entire quiz career, it might happen 3 or 4 times. And it happened last night to me. My last question, when I realised I knew the answer to it, I just felt incredibly calm.
Yeah.
I thought, this isn't going to be a guess. this is going to be impressive that I've got 8 out of 8. I'm with friends and with colleagues and with rivals, and they're going to be really impressed that I just got 8 questions right out of 8. And I felt utterly calm because I knew I was in my place.
Yeah.
I knew I was in a place where I belonged, where I was with people with whom I belonged. It just felt great.
Is that something that you kind of found within the kind of, I mean, you're famous for that kind of quizzing career.
Yeah.
Do you find that kind of sense of calm quite a lot often in that side of your career?
Yes and no. but which, I mean, quizzing can be quite stressful. Mm. The battle with you and your brain trying to get answers, the times that you make stupid errors, and the times when you don't do as well as you thought you'd gonna do.
Mm.
But yesterday, it was just really nice when I had 7 out of 7 and I thought, I know I'm going to get a full house if I get the next question right. The realisation that I knew the answer, I just felt an enormous sense of calm.
Yeah. In your kind of day-to-day outside of the quizzing world, how do you bring any sense of calm or relaxation into that at all? Or
is I don't.
That, you know.
as we're early on in the interview, I got diagnosed with Parkinson's disease in June. My stress levels have gone up, but not because of the Parkinson's disease, funnily enough, but because of the medication that I'm on and the fact that it has played a lot with my mood and with my sleep.
Yeah.
I don't sleep well. And increasingly, I find that sleep is one of the single most important factors in trying to become a more calm and happier person.
Yeah.
Is you've got to fetishise the idea of getting sleep. Because I'm a much, much more functional human being when I've got sleep.
Yes.
And so today, having had 8 hours right through, I feel so much better.
It seems like a treat sometimes, because one of the side effects of my antidepressants is, like, it disrupts your sleep patterns as well. So it's very rare to get that 8 hours. And it is just you do feel like it's almost a privilege the day you can actually function on 8 hours sleep.
I mean, my spirits are good. since the Parkinson's, everything's sort of cleared up in my head.
Yeah.
And what I realise now is I don't know what's going to happen to me for the rest of my life. Let's go out there and enjoy it and do things because you want to do them.
Yeah.
So my overall mood has been excellent. What has happened with the medication or possibly the disease process, I have no idea, is that whenever things go slightly wrong, I'm throwing tantrums in a way that I just never used to do.
Yes, indeed.
And so I wouldn't say that my default setting was calm, in that it could just go wrong very, very quickly. However, it's just good to know what's going on, because then you can try and control things.
Yes.
If self-awareness is really, really important. You can't fix or try and fix yourself unless you know what's going on.
Completely agree.
And so the fact that I'm aware and accept I'm more emotionally fragile than I used to be, and that I'm more prone to tantrums than I used to be, is part of the process in stopping it from happening.
Mm. So did you do a lot of research when you first got diagnosed?
Not a lot.
No.
There's just something quite bleak, especially with a progressive disease.
Indeed.
I just didn't want to read stories of how so-and-so got worse and worse, or this, that, and the other. I would rather focus on the present rather than the future. And so I didn't do a lot of research. No, if I'd done a bit of research, I might have realised I had Parkinson's disease before it was actually diagnosed. Because despite the fact that I'm a former doctor, I dismissed neurology. I had a right frozen shoulder since September 2017, and I simply dismissed neurology as being a possibility because it was all down one side.
Yeah.
And I thought it was a neurological disease. It would be down both. And it turns out that that's the absolute opposite of the truth. And actually, one-sided presentation is quite diagnostic that something may be seriously wrong. So in that sense, perhaps I should have done a bit more research. But I don't want to spend my life with my head reading about bad stuff.
No, of course. I think that idea of kind of just living in the present and celebrating the moment is...
Yeah.
It's a lesson for all of us, I think. A lot of us take all that for granted.
The present and the near future.
Yeah.
The first person since the diagnosis that I met... who has Parkinson's, was a Sky Sports anchor called Dave Clarkey, who presents the darts on Sky Sports. And he said, put things in your diary that excite you. And I think that's also a very, very good idea.
Yeah, indeed.
I mean, I'm, you know, in terms of that, I'm getting married on December the 14th. So I have
congratulations.
Thank you. So I have this big thing in the diary. And so it's just great when you're feeling that you might be a bit tetchy or irritable, just get onto that Excel list of wedding invitees, and just send out a few more messages saying, just checking you are coming, and you just feel better.
Yeah.
Bizarrely, my favorite band is the Pet Shop Boys. They're my all time favorite music act, and they're playing a tour of greatest hits on my 50th birthday.
Amazing.
In London, at the O2. They're gigging. When I found that out, I just went online and went, well, buying 10 tickets. If I can't find 9 friends to come with me, it doesn't matter.
No, indeed.
I will eventually find 9 friends. And I thought, I'll just buy up the tickets and have something in the diary to look forward to and excite you.
Yeah.
I think it's really important to, very much live in the present, but also the near future.
Yeah. Do you do that with your comedy as well? Because your tour starts the end of this week.
Yeah.
Is that something that excites you, or is that now kind of...
Increasingly, yeah. It's something that obsesses me. It's something, and again, that's something that I've noticed, is that the whole dynamic of writing a tour show has been different this year.
Yeah.
Because I didn't do Edinburgh. So I got diagnosed with Parkinson's, had to withdraw from the Edinburgh Festival. Edinburgh is where you prepare the show. So I've been doing it on the hoof for the last 2 months.
Right.
Not doing official previews, but doing sort of long headline spots at clubs whose promoters are very kindly giving me the stage time. And it's been really exciting to go through the creative process and to put together something to the point where sometimes I'm waking up at 6 a.m. going, right, got to start writing, the whole sleep pattern thing. And so exciting doesn't even begin to cover it. Obsessed.
Yeah.
It's kind of all I'm thinking about at the moment, is making sure that I've got as good a tour show as possible.
Amazing. The next question we usually ask is, when was the first time you became aware of mental health being a thing, be it positive or negative? But I assume, seeing as you started work as a doctor,
you know,
it would be...
I've never, ever, ever considered myself a mainstream human being.
Yes. I like that. That's nice.
I think mainstream is the politest way. I was a quiet, nerdy kid with an obsession with maths, chess. I was a junior chess champion. General knowledge, obsessed with quizzes from a young age. At the age of 16, I wrote a review of every song in the charts that was released in 1986.
Have you still got those?
No.
That'd be amazing.
And of course, I was growing up gay and not understanding any of that.
Yeah.
Because I had quite a sort of pampered, sheltered upbringing. And so I didn't know what was going on. So I've never considered myself free of mental health issues. There's always been anxieties. And then when I went to medical school, all those anxieties are exacerbated by the social need to get drunk with your friends as many times as humanly possible.
Yes.
I went to medical school in South London. The drinking culture was fierce and relentless.
I've heard that it's better, like, in medical school, it's another level of drinking culture compared to any other.
I don't know. I've got nothing to compare it to. But what I do know is that within a confined space, you are accepted if you drink.
Yes.
It's a lot easier to get social acceptance if you drink. It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
Yes, we have people that didn't drink. They just weren't as popular as people that did. And so you do it for social acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
You do it because when you're drunk, you're trying to become, the way I put it is, you drink to try and become the human being that you really, really want to be in reality.
Yeah.
But don't have the courage to do so.
Agreed.
Under normal circumstances. But, and this is the great thing about drinking, no one does it scientifically. there isn't anybody who looks at their drinking patterns and tries to think, this is the optimal way that I will have a good night.
Yes.
You drink when the alcohol is there. At various points, you drink faster because you just think, oh, I better play catch up. There's no rhyme or reason to how any of us really drink. And so sometimes it's just disastrous.
Mm-hmm.
And I started drinking when I was 18. I'd say until about 2010. So that's 20, I think that's, is that 22 years? I think that's 22
yeah.
years. I was a frequently disastrous drinker. And by disastrous, I mean getting upset with people, getting upset with friends, lashing out at people. I've been thrown out my own birthday party twice.
Bloody hell.
That's, you know, quite the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it represented a sort of deep underlying unhappiness.
Yeah.
That all of my friends were attached apart from me. That's what's changed.
Mm.
My current boyfriend says I'm a very happy drinker.
Mm.
And to hear those words just makes me really happy, because I was a deeply unhappy drinker for a long time in my life.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing, is it brings out the underlying unhappiness.
Yes, every time.
And if your deep frustration, it's not even just about the fact that all your friends are attached. It's also about the fact that all the ones you fancy are attached.
Yeah.
Or unavailable, mm-hmm. or you know, totally out of bounds. Which you don't give a shit about when you're sober.
Mm.
And then when you're drunk, it seems like the greatest injustice.
It's all encompassing kind of feeling, isn't
yeah,
it? It's all you can think about.
The greatest injustice in the world.
Yeah.
And so I've slowly morphed from a deeply unhappy person to a very happy person.
Amazing.
I wouldn't say clinically depressed.
No.
Just deeply frustrated with my life and the way it was led. And so when you talk about mental health issues, I mean, there are so many things that come under the umbrella of mental health. And what I don't talk about very often is that from the age of about 23 to the age of about 38, I spent virtually every penny I had at Ladbrokes, William Hill, Coral. Why an intelligent man would do that? Because that intelligent man was bored and wanted to try and put his intelligence into other areas and see what he could do with it. I think a lot of people with gambling problems have above level IQ because they think deludedly they could beat the system without realising, of course, that the system has been designed to defeat them. And you can only defeat the system, really, if you had a tip.
Yeah.
If you know a horse race owner that says, my horse is actually great, and I'm not in that world. So I just poured money and poured money and poured money. And so I spent my 20s and 30s being a relentlessly unhappy binge drinker, a deeply lonely is not quite the right word, because I've always had lots of friends.
Yeah.
Fundamentally a lonely person underneath it all, because not only was I not in a relationship, I never even got close.
Yeah.
I never got to date three. And also compulsive gambler. Also add to that that I was a general practitioner, a career that was never really designed for my skill set, but one that I found myself sort of not forced into, but falling into out of apathy and lack of other options.
Right, okay.
As much as anything else. I'm from a medical background. It just seemed like the logical thing to do. You got a whole cocktail of things going on in my life that, although never gave me what I would call a diagnosed mental health condition, meant that mental health was always at the forefront of my thinking.
Yes, indeed.
It was always trying to go, how can I get myself out of this fug?
Yeah.
It's constantly there.
Indeed. It's a displacement theory, isn't it? It's if you're doing the betting or you're doing the drinking, you're not thinking about like how lonely you feel. It doesn't matter how many people are around you and how many friends love you and how many family members love you. If you feel that sense of loneliness, it's so hard to sit with it and try and figure it out. It's so much easier to have a few beers or do the betting. What was the kind of turning point then? Because you said that you were betting until you were kind of mid-30s.
I think the internet's the turning point.
Right.
I was bored. Mm. At 2 in the afternoon, if I had nothing to do, just walked down to the bookmakers and put some bets on out of sheer boredom. There's no excuse for boredom now.
No, that's true.
And this is the thing that I keep saying to people, is the internet is an encyclopedia of the universe. Mm-hmm. It's there for you. It's the most remarkable resource that the human race has ever come up with. And it doesn't matter what your interest is, or you can find your interest online.
Yeah.
I was a junior chess player of a decent standard. I got, with the quizzing that's going on in my life, I've got no desire to necessarily go back to that. But should I have that desire, you just go on the internet and you just find out what to do.
Yeah.
If your thing in life is that elderly men eat candy floss in front of you whilst walking their dog, you'll find a website for the fetish for elderly men eating candy floss while walking their dog. It's all there.
Yeah.
And I know it sounds smug because I've always been somebody with a massive support system behind me, but I feel increasingly that if they want to get better with their mental health, the responsibility has to be with them as well as other people.
Completely and utterly.
You've got to have, because there have never been more resources out there. And this is something that I recognise as a former GP with an interest in mental health, as a comedian who has lots of friends with mental health issues, as a professional quizzer who has lots of friends with mental health issues. And we talk, and it becomes increasingly apparent that some people are very good at listening to advice and acting on advice, and other people would rather stick with their mindset and how they do things.
Completely.
And one of the things I'm obsessed with in life is you can't assume that your mindset is the correct one. Life changes, the world changes, everything changes. I never thought I was going to get married. It didn't even occur to me that one day I'd get married. But my parents are getting on. I've got an autistic nephew and a neurotypical niece, and I would like to introduce an official uncle into their life.
Yeah, amazing.
And the reason I didn't want to get married is I didn't think that the strength of our relationship would necessarily change just because we were married. But I just think they're making things official is quite nice. And, you know, I talk about this in my touring show, about the fact that this epiphany happened for no other reason. I was drunk on Prosecco at Christmas Day, and I was just looking at Ollie, my now fiancé, and just going, yeah, come on, let's give it a go. But literally the day before, if you'd said, would you like to marry Ollie? I'd go, we don't need to get married. And it's important to have the mental flexibility to change your mindset.
Completely.
And not assume that your template for how you get on with life is necessarily the correct template.
Indeed.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Okay, I have two new obsessions that I need to share with you. Impress No Glue Press-On Manis and Impress Press-On Falsies Lashes. Trust me, these are getting ready game changers. Both require no glue, so there is no damage to your natural nails and lashes, no mess, and no annoying dry times. Just one step and you're done. Boom. Instant glam. Visit impressbeauty.com/presson and use code PRESSON25 at checkout for 25% off Impress Manicure and Press-On Falsies.
Because you mentioned that you talk about that in your comedy show.
Yeah.
Do you bring in other aspects of your life? Like, you've had all this news this year. Do you bring that into the show?
Of course, because my show was meant to be called, well, it is called, A Hazy Little Thing Called Love. And it's about how a man who was never going to get married has decided to change all that and get married. Mm-hmm. Then all this happened. And suddenly that idea of love has taken on all sorts of other meanings.
Yeah.
There's the love that your family have for you, that your friends have for you, for the people that you didn't know love you, but they've all come in to support you. Love is a very varied thing. And the one thing at this point that I'm really, really grateful about in the way that I've lived my life is I've lived my life relentlessly picking up friends. Mm. And keeping in touch with friends. And suddenly that's really, you know, a really useful thing.
Yeah,
because I've got to fill a wedding with friends. And we've got 295 people coming to the wedding. I need a support network for the next few years. So, of course, I realise that not everybody has that outgoing personality type to do that.
Yeah.
So, as I said, it's really important for me not to get smug and go, hey, everyone, pick up friends all through your life. But what I will say is that there's never been a better time to try and pick up friends.
Mm-hmm.
Facebook, for instance, such a stressful, maligned thing in so many ways, can be really useful.
Mm.
It can be really... if you pick up... I'll give you a little chain of events. I used to play Online Countdown, you know, the Channel 4
game show.
And so when And every so often, people would find me on Facebook and ask for a friend request. And if I thought they look all right, I'd just add them, no harm done. And then a guy called Chris and his mate Sam, who I hadn't met, came to see me do a gig in Liverpool, and I knew him from Online Countdown. And we became friends. He became friends with Ollie when I started going out with Ollie. We would occasionally go out drinking together. And then in June last year, Ollie had a court case for speeding in Birkenhead. And he needed somewhere to stay the night before. And then my mate Chris, who I didn't know in real life until he added me on Facebook and came to a gig in Liverpool, his family put Ollie up the night before.
Oh.
Make connections and you've got more chance that people come in and support you and help you when you need their help.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not the reason to make connections.
No. It's just a beautiful kind of side effect of it.
But I do think that Facebook is something that people can be more knowing about how to use.
I completely agree. I think it's the education, and it's just knowing what's good for your mental health, because there's a whole thing that social media is bad for us and all that sort of thing. But
addiction of any description is bad.
Yes. But if you create curate it to what is best for you.
Yeah.
I just have my friends and my family on there.
Yeah.
And they are all like just posting really lovely pictures of their family. And it's just lovely to go through and make sure that they're all having a nice time and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's when you start kind of hate following people and all that kind of weird, and that comes to the addiction.
Well, there's people coming to my wedding in December that I've not seen for years, but I never lost touch with them.
Yeah.
Because a very good friend of mine from medical school who lives out in Western Australia, and I've not seen her since 2006.
Bloody hell.
And she happens to be in Britain at the time of my wedding.
Amazing.
And she's going to come. And I wouldn't have been able to invite her if it wasn't for Facebook, because we'd have lost touch by now.
Yeah.
So it's, I think, you know, people need to be savvy.
Yeah, completely.
I have friends with whom we discuss mental health things from time to time. And the most important thing that I find is that you're prepared to listen to what the other person's saying.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to agree with them. So of course you don't. This is your life and your choice of your life. But don't ignore them.
Mm-hmm.
Don't go, well, that conversation's done and dusted. Let's move on to something else. I think I say this with the caveat, of course, that so much depression is biochemical, but a lot of depression is understandable.
Mm-hmm.
And I would, you know, if someone's parent has died and someone's feeling bereft, I would never want to patronise them by going, this is your road to getting better.
Yeah,
because, of course, there is no necessary road to getting better. But there are a number of life anxieties and stresses, et cetera, where you need to be a bit proactive about how you go about things.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think, for instance, that if you've been single for a long time and you're depressed about it, that there's any excuse for not being on a dating app or website.
Mm.
Because if you're not in the shop window.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, you're the one person that's going to be most important in looking after your own mental health.
Yeah.
And you're the one that needs to kick yourself up the ass. And it can be
horrible
and it can be difficult, but it doesn't
happen. The gambling was interesting because I knew that nobody could help me other than myself.
Yeah.
And eventually I just got bored.
Mm.
Eventually I just thought, I'm on the telly. That helped as well.
Yeah.
Being on the telly helped in the sense that I didn't want to be recognised in bookmakers.
Yeah, indeed.
But it was like, I've got more better things to be doing with my life than sitting in a bookmaker's trying to read the form of a dog race that I barely understand, because it gives me an instant hit to put 20 quid on a horse and see whether it comes in or doesn't come in.
Mm.
It's that instant hit thing. I was never I'd never bet on who's going to win the Football World Cup at the beginning of the World Cup.
Yeah.
I needed quick hits. It was that need for quick hits that was fueling, you know, the possibility of walking into a bookmaker's with £20 in your pocket and walking out with 100 was driving me.
Mm-hmm.
And I just got bored.
Yeah. Were you open at that time? Because you said earlier that you and your friends in all the different kind of aspects of your life were quite open about their mental health. Were you open about this with your friends at the time?
Yeah, well, I had to be. It was a very big part of my life.
Yeah.
And nobody kind of knew what to do to help me.
Yeah, it's a difficult one.
And perhaps part of that reason, maybe, that I was downplaying it.
Right.
Maybe. I don't know. I honestly can't remember the degree to which I might have been downplaying it with my closest friends. But there was support, but the support was never much more than, Paul, stop it.
Yeah.
Because sometimes your friends don't have answers.
Mm.
And I kind of knew the only way I was ever going to stop was to do it myself. I honestly don't think that me going to Gamblers Anonymous would have made me any more aware or less aware of my problems.
Yeah.
I've never lacked awareness.
Mm. Indeed. And obviously when you announced on your Twitter that you had been diagnosed with Parkinson's disease, the comments section underneath was a lovely kind of support and so many people out there. Have you found that you've got like that new support network on Twitter as well of people that have said lovely things?
Yes, and it's nice.
Yeah.
And it's lovely, but I don't want people living their lives vicariously,
of course,
through me.
Yeah,
I appreciate the support, but I'm getting on with my life.
Yeah,
and strangers being nice to me is always nice,
mm-hmm.
but I don't necessarily need it.
Yeah,
I don't feel that it's a driving force that keeps me going. It's been very nice that people with Parkinson's have come out of the woodwork.
Amazing.
And,
yeah.
And every time I see anyone with Parkinson's who follows me, I follow them back.
Mm.
And the reason I follow them back is just for them to know that if they ever want to send me a message directly,
yeah,
I'm there, and vice versa,
yeah,
of course. And so that for me is a useful little network thing. The Parkinson's was very interesting. I've been very open about what happened with the Parkinson's. I was diagnosed on May the 30th, and unknown to me, until I look back on it later, I broke down. I physically and emotionally broke down. I know this because I watched the Champions League final, Liverpool versus Spurs. Liverpool on my team. And I watched it and I just couldn't get off the sofa when they scored their second goal. I was sat slumped there. It's nice.
Yeah.
And that was a game that a month previously, Liverpool had won the second leg of the Champions League against Barcelona, semi-final. And it was one of the most emotional games of my life. But I didn't know I had Parkinson's then. And 2 days after I had Parkinson's, I'd spent the morning with my head in an MRI scan, missing the World Quizzing Championships, one of my three big quizzes of the year. Then the evening in my sister's watching the football. And I was just nowhere.
Mm.
A few days later, I appeared on Celebrity Catchphrase, and my abiding memories of Celebrity Catchphrase is my brain wasn't functioning at all. I just couldn't do anything.
No.
2 weeks later, when I did the blog, I can't even begin to explain the degree to which everything lifted. It would be an exaggeration to say immediately.
Yeah, of course.
But that sense of right now, get on with your life,
mm-hmm.
that just hit me at that point, where it's like, it's out there. The idea that you have agency with how you live your life, I felt that I'd lost for that 2 weeks because I couldn't, apart from close friends and family, I couldn't tell anyone. People that work on the production of Celebrity Catchphrase didn't know.
Yeah.
They had no idea that I was doing this, having just been diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. When I was on Taskmaster, I just didn't know I had Parkinson's.
Yeah.
And I watch it back and I go, you've got Parkinson's. Can you not see? Your face is stiff. Your emotions are stiff.
Mm.
It was only when I was watching it back that I thought, oh, yeah. It was, my neurologist said, oh, I saw you on Taskmaster. Pretty obvious.
Really? Bloody hell.
All this weird stuff was going on. In May this year was the strangest month of my life.
Yeah, of course.
Because I was in New Zealand for having the greatest comedy time I've ever had, but increasingly aware that I had Parkinson's disease. Because my limp was getting worse, my mood was getting worse, my emotional fragility was getting worse. I knew what was going on. But I couldn't admit it to anyone because I had to maximise how much I enjoyed this comedy trip to New Zealand. I had to put it absolutely at the back of my head and go, you're in New Zealand. You're selling out every night. This is the greatest comedy experience of your life. Just enjoy it. Yeah. And this sort of dissonance in your head was a really stressful thing to deal with.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, I must have got drunk at least 20 times out of 25 nights out in New Zealand because that was my way of forgetting.
Yeah, indeed.
That was my way of forgetting that when I got home, I was going to be diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. It was in my head, it was a certainty.
Mm.
So I had all this going on in my life, and the best thing that happened was that blog. Absolutely. My dad was upset, going, why have you gone so public? And I had to explain to him that this is my way of introducing some control
absolutely
into my life. And I think it doesn't matter what it is that's ailing you from a physical or mental point of view. The moment you introduce some sort of self-administration and control, it really, really helps.
Yeah.
Now, things will obviously change over the years. I'm not naive, but I'm really proud to say that this positivity that I've got, it's not fake. I'm enjoying life.
Yeah.
I don't get up and go, oh, I've got Parkinson's. I get up and go, what can I do with my day today? Because the fact that I've got Parkinson's isn't going to go away, and me getting upset about it isn't going to help my health. What's going to help my health is having a positive outlook on it. So it's not just a way of coping, it's a way of helping.
Yeah.
Because the one thing I realised when I was diagnosed is that my health is very dependent on my mood. And so I'm determined to keep my mood high. And not in a fake way, in that I think if you are upset, or if you are stressed out, then hiding those emotions is not a healthy way to go about it. But just in a sort of, let's just get on with life.
Yeah.
I have not had any dark nights since June. I've not had any dark nights of the soul. I've not had any nights where I've been sat with my friends drinking and suddenly I'm morose and crying my eyes out and going, what's going to happen to me? I've not had any of that. I've had tiredness because of the medication and the sleep, but I've had really, really, really high mood. And that's what I want to keep up.
Yeah.
And I've done, the friends have helped. The family dynamic has changed. So in the first 2 weeks, my mum and dad were a nightmare because they just didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
And ever since the diagnosis has been confirmed and everything's out there, we're just a family getting on with it. I talk about this in my show, that my dad is on his last legs because of cardiovascular disease. My mum had breast cancer in 2007 And neither of them two are the most unwell people in my family. The most unwell person in my family is my nephew, Leo, who's 6 years old and has severe autism and therefore behaves badly 95% of the time. And the poor kid is by far the pivot around which the family unit rotates. Mm. And so I'm just another unwell member of the family. That's my status in the family. Yeah. And as a result, I'm loving it in the sense that we're all there for each other and no one's got priority over anyone else. Mm-hmm. We're just all hanging in there and supporting each other. You can't do this on your own.
No.
I used to be very much a soul traveller when it came to emotions and things changed. 2004, my best mate had severe depression after a breakup and the intensity with which I was there for him was a reflection of what can be done with friends for each other.
Yeah.
And just to illustrate the point that there's no reason to be a soldier. And if it's not your friends or if you don't have friends, then seek professional help.
Yep, definitely.
I can't think of anything that's gone on in my life, and there's been a hell of a lot since my adulthood, that hasn't been improved by the input of friends.
That's amazing. We've got about 5 minutes left, so I'm just going to ask our last question, which is, if you could go back and give any advice to your younger self about mental health or living without misery in any guise, what would you say?
It's a really, really hard question.
I'm sorry.
No. I'll tell you why it's a really hard question. Is so much of the great things in my life have come about because of disaster.
Yeah.
Some of the best friends that I have in the world, I only ever met because I failed my medical finals. That first job never happened. I went to King's Lynn in Norfolk and made some of the best friends in my life. If I had been a successful doctor and treated the course with the reverence it deserved, I'd never been a stand-up comedian. If I had done the correct thing and not done science and done some sort of arts A-level and, you know, the job that I was most suited to was law, mm-hmm. my entire life is a complete parallel universe where none of my friends that I have at the moment I'll have met. And so it's really hard to say what is the correct advice that you'd give to your younger self. But the one thing I feel with great passion is that gambling is pure evil. And the one thing where that I have a disaster in my life that didn't lead to anything positive was gambling. Mm. Secondly, always think about future planning. We're not taught at school how to save money, how to stay in good credit, things like that. Make sensible decisions. You know, get advice. Use your parents to help you out. Mm-hmm. Get you know, these people are wise. They've made better life decisions than you'll ever dream of to get to the position they are. Use their help. Don't be scared to seek help, because I was a financial disaster area because I just didn't think about forward planning. So seeking the advice of elders is one. Number two, never developing any addictions of any description. It doesn't matter what the addiction is. It just gets in the way of real life. Indeed. And if you think you're enjoying your addiction, you're not.
Mm-hmm. You're avoiding something else.
You're a prisoner to it. And then the third thing is stay in touch with friends. Don't let them drift away. That's a lot easier now than it was when I was, my age. But if you feel that you've made a valuable connection, an emotional connection, just don't lose them. Mm. Because then one day you'll wake up and go, why did I never, ever see him? He was great. Mm. I've got one like that. I've got a friend who I was in New York for a week with in 1998 called Dan. And I just don't know what he's... I know he's a radiologist somewhere, but I keep thinking to myself, come on, get off your ass, hunt him down, say hello. Because for a week in New York in 1998, he was your bezzy mate.
Yeah.
You did New York together in 1998. Try not to lose... I mean, there's a natural process in life where you lose touch with friends. I think it's really, really important to keep in touch. Another thing I'd say is just be aware that everybody is having problems. I fell out with a friend on Facebook 2 or 3 years ago. I'm back friends with him now. But in those 3 years I fell out with him, his life fell apart. Nothing to do with me. You know. And I just thought, God, what a stupid thing to fall out with someone that actually needed your support, needed your support and help. So just be aware of the world around you and the fact that you're not the only person who's got issues. And then the other thing to say is, for all that you should keep in touch with friends, for all that you should use your friends as a support network, for all that you should seek advice from elders because they've lived lives as nuanced as your own life and made their own mistakes and got to where they are, all of this, sometimes it's just not enough.
Yeah.
And when it's just not enough, seek help. Don't curl up into a ball. Don't reject the outside world. There has never, ever, ever been more resources literally at the tip of your fingertips than there is now. The whole, you know, as I said before, the internet is the most extraordinary invention the human race has ever come up with. Get on there and find someone who can help you.
Amazing. Beautiful.
We hope you can take something from this podcast away with you in your day-to-day life. Whatever situation you're in, you're not by yourself. We can share our stories, share our experiences. We can help each other know that things do get better.
And thank you so much for listening. If any of the themes brought up in today's episode have affected you, or you think you just need to talk to someone, the Calm Helpline is free, anonymous, and open from 5 until midnight every single day of the year. Right, some quick thank yous. Thank you to Paul for being so honest and brilliant in this episode. Thank you to Dave and Calm for helping us make this podcast. And thank you to you for supporting us, for sharing on social media, and for generally being wonderful. If you could like, subscribe, rate, review, all of that jazz, that'd be wonderful. Next week is Lauren's triumphant return to the podcast. Oh, these were dark days without Lauren. And that's it. Until then, bye, 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 bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Okay, I have two new obsessions that I need to share with you. Impress No Glue Press-On Manis and Impress Press-On Falsies Lashes. Trust me, these are getting ready game changers. Both require no glue, so there is no damage to your natural nails and lashes, no mess, and no annoying dry times. Just one step and you're done. Boom. Instant glam. Visit impressbeauty.com/presson and use code PRESSON25 at checkout for 25% off Impress manicure and Press-On falsies.
We're all looking to make more sustainable choices, but making your own shoes out of natural materials could pose a few challenges. At the Allbirds Innovation Lab, they're doing all the sciencey stuff, like research and testing to create shoes from natural materials, like leather made from plants, eucalyptus tree fiber, and sugarcane. It's not rocket science. It's shoe science. Allbirds is making shoes better than natural. They're supernatural. Find your perfect pair at Allbirds.com today. That's Allbirds.com.
Would you give your mum, dad, aunt, or that uncle who hugged your partner a little too long free access to your phone?
Oh, no! Oh, my God, it's a really long video. Ew!
In Dave's brand new YouTube original, Get Off My Phone, we've got 6 comedians to give their phones over to a relative with total freedom to read messages, DMs, photos, and browser history.
Where's your search history?
Sorry?
What to do, tips for relief.
The rules are simple. Their relative can read anything they want and even make calls from the comedian's phone.
What is this? What is...
I don't want this one.
That looks really bad.
Starring Tanya Moore, Anya Magliano, Finlay Christie, Travis J with his mum Angie Lamar, Hayley Morris, Grace Campbell and dad Alistair Campbell.
Slightly sexually compromising people.
Divulging their deepest digital secrets.
What the hell is happening?
Get Off My Phone, a Dave YouTube original. Available now on Dave's YouTube channel.